All right, everybody, welcome to Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P. Today is 2/23/23, second month, 23rd day, 2023. And welcome, everybody. It's great to be here. For those of you watching, Dr. Made is in Israel on a calling. So we're sending her lots of love, and she has sent all of you guys her love. And I want to, before we get to the topics that all of you I know are dying to talk about, there's a quarterback in the NFL named Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers has been with the Green Bay Packers his entire career. And a couple of weeks ago, he said that he was going to go on a dark retreat for 4 days and then come out from the dark retreat to tell everyone whether he was going to stay with the Green Bay Packers or request a trade. The buzz in the sports world is crazy about dark retreats. Do you know about dark retreats? I mean, I know that we're doing them in Oregon a lot. 4-day retreats, 7-day retreats, 28-day retreats. Absolutely no light. Some of the rooms, you're alone the whole time. You learn where the toilet is. They give you 2 meals a day. Some places actually allow a phone, which make no sense to me. so people are tweeting out and YouTubing their dark retreat experiences. But I'm just curious. It sounds like an amazing opportunity to go deep. And I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of it, interested. What are your thoughts?
I've heard of it. And I talked to a young woman who lost her beloved and she went into a dark retreat. And she said what it was is that it was so restful, just so restful. Like the first couple days, she said all she did was sleep. Then she woke up and she did journaling. Now there was no light, but so she just, you know, did it, knew where everything was. Twice a day, this was in Oregon, they put food in through a window, and she said she would do it again in a heartbeat. She found it very, very healing. I find the idea of it, this is not something I'm going to do. I thought that my silent retreat in Thailand at a Buddhist retreat, that's as close as I will ever get. And I have to tell you, I just hated it. Everyone else says, oh, you'll come back so glowing. You will just love it. It's like, not really. When I found the monk's coffee garden to sneak out and get a latte, I thought, okay, I'm going to survive this.
You know, Larry, the Sullivans, you know, who we all know, and we've all spent time at their place, and that their daughter went on a dark retreat. The night when we were down, Christiane, when we went down and we did that award thing, you know, that we did, I ended up, you guys were staying at the big house, and I ended up spending the night with their daughter's apartment, who had an extra room. And she and her boyfriend and I sat up till, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning talking, even. And so I'd been up for like 24 hours by that point. And she was on her way. She was going to go to one of those dark retreats. I mean, you guys may know that. And I was telling her that I really hoped that I would hear back from her after she went through that experience, because it sounded intriguing to me, but it sounded kind of, I don't know that I would be able to do it, quite frankly. So I don't know.
I spoke to her the day after she got back.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did. And she had a blast. And when she first told me about it, my nervous system went into a choking hold. I was like, a dark retreat. And now, ever since I've been hearing more and more about it, I'm starting to get more and more intrigued. And I don't think I want to do 4 days. She said, you really need, and that's true. Most people do sleep a lot the first couple of days, as you described, Chris.
Yeah.
And then after that, there's a clairvoyance. There's an intuitive gain that happens because you're not using any of your 5 senses. So your other senses are so sensitive and palpable. Oh. So I would,
Larry, it would do well with that, because I know some of the other things that you have, the, you know, the spiritual journeys that you, that you've done over the years, you know, different types of things that you've done that have been very meaningful to you. And I think that that would be something that would be very meaningful to you.
I agree. Thank you. Right.
But you'd have to go to Oregon, right? I mean, I just, Oregon's off my list. It's just off my list.
No, Chris, there are places in Thailand, in
South America.
America, they're all over the world.
Yeah. Well, it's I don't know that I could get in. I don't know that I personally could ever do that much shutdown for that long a period of time. I can't go without my computer, my cell phone for about 3 hours, and then I'm in withdrawal. I don't know what I would do for 4 days. I mean, I'd be bouncing off the walls. They'd have to be, you know, put, instead of food between those little slots, they'd have to be giving me like sedatives or something, you know?
The darkness will create the sedative.
Well, whatever, Larry. It would for you. I'm not sure it would for me.
I'm just thinking about the business opportunity here. Let's think about this. Somebody has figured out they can run essentially a hotel with zero services, except not even electricity, but two questionable meals a day that you don't have much choice about. So, you know, honestly, it's a brilliant business move. I was gonna sell carbon credits because I have, you know, 100 and some acres of forest. And I thought, I'll just sell a picture of a tree and you can buy the carbon credits to offset your carbon debt. And I'll get a little brass plaque. You know, you give me $1,000 and I'll get a little brass plaque for like $750, and I'll nail it onto the tree and take a picture of it and send you the picture of your tree. And just, you can feel good about yourself that you're not polluting and you've got a green footprint. So this to me sounds like the hotel equivalent.
All right. That's very good.
I guess, Sherry, we should start talking offline about this business opportunity.
Maybe so. Maybe
hey,
so.
Maybe you can do some kind of medical. Let me ask you this. So other than this being kind of reminds me of the Native Americans where they go kind of used to go out and they'd be in the woods without anything and they just kind of be staked out for a few days. Is there some physiologic reset that occurs when you go into the dark? Because, you know, when I was in Groton, Connecticut, they used to have a sensory deprivation tank. Yeah. Okay. Right. This was an entire room that literally floated. The room was floating. It was completely it was an anechoic chamber. When you walked into before you even got to the deprivation tank, you walked into that room and you felt like suddenly your head just expanded because you're not really, when you think you're in quiet, you're not in quiet. That is quiet. So you go in this anechoic chamber that's floating, and then you go into this tank, and they would put these guys in this tank, and they'd put even like, they'd put something on their skin so they couldn't even feel the water that they were floating in. I mean, it was really, really crazy. And people would just go crazy in there. Some people just could not be in there.
But think about it.
Try it.
From an autonomic nervous system perspective, there's no sympathetic input.
Yeah.
So there's such re-regulation of autonomic activity that you balance into a much more stable parasympathetic mode. And you actually reset your inflammatory processes, your detoxification processes. And that's one of the reasons that some people go crazy is because they're so used to the sympathetic input to keep that hindbrain, that fight or flight response going as a way of survival. I envision this as a real way of tapping in to something very, very, very deep in the spiritual process. But, you know, again, to be continued. I'm sure we've not heard the last of dark retreats.
No, we haven't.
You know, the problem with that, with dark retreats, is the name.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, I mean, if you call it a dark retreat, I mean, given all the satanic stuff and everything that's going on right now, I mean, I think that would be like what Lee said in terms of a business opportunity. We need to think about it as parasympathetic reset or something, you know,
autonomic
reset, you know, and give it a different name, even though it's the same process. I mean, when you call it a dark retreat, that right there, at least for me personally, I would say no, thank you, without knowing anything else about it. But once you understand, it just means that you are it's like being totally blind. You know, about four days. I mean, there's no light. No. And, you know, there's some exercises that I have some patients do in my office that are autonomic resets. And one of them has to do with, like you stand behind a chair and you hold on to the rail of the chair and you stand on one foot, you find a spot right in front of you and you stand on one foot and you stand until it's completely like you have a rod, like a beam of light, a rod going through your head, down your spine, down your leg, into the bottom of your foot, so that you stand absolutely, there's no wiggles in your foot or anything, absolutely still. And if you can do that for like about a minute, and then you do the other foot, and then you learn to do it without holding onto the chair, and then you learn to do it with your hands in front of you like this. And then the last part is you have your hands up like this, standing on one foot with that beam of light going all the way through you with your eyes closed, because you take out your sensory of being able to know where you are in space based on your vision. And that whole autonomic reset for people that have had back surgeries, back injuries, you know, things with do with MS, you know, early onset MS, that entire sympathetic, parasympathetic thing of that beam going through your head, down your spinal cord, down your hip, down into the bottom of your foot with your arms up like this. So you're not holding your arms or doing this in space. So your arms are like this and your eyes are closed because you have no visual sensory of knowing where you are in space. Of then you're totally just concentrating on where your physical body is in space. And it's a resetting of the autonomic nervous system. It's an osteopathic thing, right? So it's a resetting of that. And so this is kind of like that, but it's not really incorporating the physical, but it's resetting where you are in space because you have no vision. You have no vision. It's dark. You have nothing to hold on to. So, I mean, from a physiological perspective on what could this possibly do? I think from physiologically, if you actually got, you breathed and you stopped being in having anxiety because you're worried if there are bugs crawling in from the sides of the walls or something like that, that's what I would be thinking about. It's like, what else is in here besides me that I can't see, right? That I think it would be a pretty amazing thing.
Okay, good. So let's go from the darkness into the light. And I'm going to mention something and then I'm going to hand it off to the three of you, because I know it's going to incite lots of good conversation for our audience. So sometime this year, the people of East Palestine were given the opportunity to get QR codes and digital passports to allow them to be tracked for their health and other things. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there was a train derailment. And a day or so later, after the train derailment, the material that was in the train was detonated and exploded. And somehow, we think we know what chemicals were in there, but there was a poisoning of water and animals and people and the air. And then all of a sudden, it comes out that there's a stipulation in U.S. policy whereby water and land that's deemed to be poisonous will be taken over by the government. And so fast forward, the Cleveland mayor has volunteered to become the first city to create a smart city.
Ugh. It's not a smart city, it's a 15-minute city, right?
15-minute city, yeah, that's what I meant, sorry.
Yeah.
Right, so, help here. What do we need to tell people? What do we need to say?
Well, they're doing it in Maine. Maine is ground zero for this. They've already polluted with something they told farmers was safe years ago. They've already polluted hundreds of acres of farmland. And so there's this plan in Maine. There's a plan in New Hampshire. This is a plan for moving people into these 15-minute cities, that they come and take your land.
So, and you know, this also started, I made a little video about this, just going through the chemicals and why I didn't think that that was what they were telling you. I mean, not that there isn't some local toxicity that could be happening. I'm not denying that, but this idea of the animals dying, you know, how do we know that? And the thing that is, I think, complete nonsense is this, well, I can't say complete nonsense. I just don't buy it, the dioxin. And the reason that they're because people are confusing, they're conflating vinyl chloride with polyvinyl chloride, two completely different animals. Yes, polyvinyl chloride, you burn it, you get dioxin. Vinyl chloride, it's extremely flammable, extremely volatile. It just goes away. Okay. It goes into carbon dioxide and HCl, which makes the air acrid for a few days, maybe, but then it's gone. It's going to go away. And there was another chemical that they found downstream. I think it was a butyl acrylate or something, but that's what gave it that kind of little oily slick. But again, in sunlight, it gets biodegraded. When you leave it alone and it goes to the edge of streams and lakes, it goes biodegraded. It doesn't linger. The reason they had to invoke dioxin is that that's bioaccumulative. That is not good. Dioxin is not good. But keep in mind, you know, when I had kids, I did cloth diapers because I'm a child of the 60s. I want to be green. I grew up that way. But I didn't bleach them because Clorox bleach, how many people use Clorox bleach? It goes to dioxin in the ecosphere. So if you really care about this, then don't be burning your trash in the back and don't be using Clorox bleach. So we do a lot of these things, but I'm just going to say I interviewed Pete Chambers, Colonel Chambers, a friend of mine, Lieutenant Colonel Chambers, Army retired. So he was up there on the ground. And what he said is everywhere he went, the Ohioans told him the same thing. Oh, this is nothing. They do this to us all the time. They're trying to take our land and we're not leaving. He said everywhere he went. And then of course he brought up the point, and so did Scott Kesterson, about the Amish. The Amish, those two farmers, you know, they won their suit at some level. I don't know if it's completely done, but at any rate, you can't forcibly vaccinate cattle in this country anymore. That's what they proved. And so now they've got to do something else. They're coming after our food supply. And I would say that's the big picture here, is that this is an attack. It's part of a multi-dimensional, uncharacteristic stealth warfare against America. And if you look at the world history, ultimately boils down to calories. And they always have to control the food supply to control a country. That's why they murdered the kulaks to take over this, make it the Soviet Union. Same idea. So that's where we are. I think that's what's going on. And they have, and this is an end game scenario we have to resist. I do want to say something funny about, not only did they have this, you know, kind of FEMA thing where they gave out wristbands and did all that, but that movie that we all talked about the other day that came out 2 years ago, I think it was called Noise, about exactly this, in exactly this location. I watched it after everybody talked about it so I could see what we were talking about here. And it just shows you, this is the characteristics of a PSYOP, is a really great visual, right? And I thought to myself, okay, now it's been 2 weeks or something since I watched that movie. What do I really remember about it? What are my most vivid things? There are two scenes that are unbelievably memorable. One is this big black cloud with this all the electrical stuff in it. And the other one, what was the other one? See if you had the same one, Christiane. It was the guy who played the college professor, whom I like as an actor. I think he was really good. But what college professor in America wears an Oxford-style black robe to lecture in? Zero. And he was a Hitler expert. That's always part of the thing. You have to invoke Hitler, I guess. And then he walked around. Remember, he goes around the classroom and he's talking about the point of something to do with Hitler. And he's going, he's got this black robe on. He goes, death, death, death. That was the end of his lecture, all around the room saying that. I mean, you know, those are the two scenes that, and that's what they do. That's a great, I mean, it was just these guys have PSYOP. They're the masters of the PSYOP, but don't fall for it. It's just as ridiculous as, you know, the pictures, the CGI pictures they show you of SARS-CoV-2, that now they're using the same CGI picture for avian flu. You know, it's all PSYOP.
So is the 15-minute city real? Or is that a PSYOP?
Yeah, they're real. They're doing it in England, in Bath, England.
In France, they're doing it. And they're the place that they were doing it, not Bath, there was another city that they're setting it up, that they're trying to put up the barricades. And in the middle of the night, the people in the town are going down and carrying out the barricades like every night. And so they put them all up, like you can only go down these certain streets.
Right,
and in the middle of the night, people go out, they have hoodies and masks, and they go out and they tear out the barricades. And so, you know, so these are the kinds of passive resistance that we have to do.
Yeah,
when they start doing this stuff, we just have to say no. And if they're trying to like barricade off roads and stuff like that, we just need to go out in the middle of the night and take down the barricades. I do want to say something about Cleveland, though, because I live here. So what's important to know about Cleveland is that when people think about Cleveland, they really in their mind see a map that is really like this big, that's like Northeast Ohio. Cleveland proper is the smallest metropolitan city in the United States.
Really?
Cleveland, when you think about Northeast Ohio, is Cleveland plus 57 suburbs. Oh. And every suburb has its own mayor, its own city council, its own chief of police, its own fire department. And it's one of the reasons why it's challenging to get anything done here in Northeast Ohio, because you've got all these little fiefdoms. So Cleveland proper is really small. It's not Northeast Ohio. And so I think what we need to do, I need to do and activate some of our people around here, is get our local area of 57 suburbs understanding what this 15-minute city is, and not allow the project creep out from Cleveland itself out into the suburban area and keep it centralized downtown. Now, they started this whole Agenda 2030 thing downtown maybe 5 years ago, where they were making all these different areas in the city that they would block it off so you couldn't drive down there. You could only walk or ride a bicycle or stuff like that. It's Cleveland. We have winter here, oh, by the way. No, but this winter we've had none. I mean, it's February 23rd. It was 68 degrees here today. We've had no snow except over Christmas vacation when we had that really cold break for about 4 or 5 days. We had about 7 inches of snow. And then it, like 2 days later, went up into the 50s, melted all of it. We've had no snow. And I said something on one of my podcasts the other day. I said, the way December, January, and February have been in Cleveland this year with no snow and mostly in the 50s and 60s is as unusual as if it was July and we were having a blizzard. I mean, this just doesn't happen here, but they want to have these little areas where you can only walk or ride bicycles or all this other stuff. But they've started that quite a while ago. But the cool thing about it actually is all of those areas where you can't drive, they have the best restaurants in town. They have all these outdoor cafes. I mean, they've made it seem, you know, like they do with these things really, really cool, but it's not as massive as what you might think. And if we get busy in our suburbs, we may be able to confine it to Cleveland proper.
Wow. I hope.
Good to hear. Yeah. They're doing the same in Portland, Maine. Portland is one of their smart cities. In fact, we saw a map of the smart cities going all the way up the coast of Maine. So, but, you know, we're crawling with young global woofers, mother woofers, you know, the World Economic Forum, young global leaders. They're just crawling around this place like cockroaches. So
do you think,
you know, that brings up a question that's in the Q&A, just kind of play off of what you just said, Chris.
Yeah.
A gal named Mary wrote in and said, I've invited some people who I love to listen to this broadcast tonight. Can you briefly state what WEF is, what the World Economic Forum is, who's behind it, and why? Let's talk about this just a little bit, because they need to hear this.
Well, it's the World Economic Forum, and it's run by a self-appointed czar, Klaus Schwab, and his right-hand man is Yuval Noah Harari, whose name apparently means son of Cain.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
I asked Clay Clark, was that true? He said, yes, it's true. And he's the one who wrote Homo sapiens, but now he is saying we are becoming a new species. It's time for surveillance under the skin. Klaus Schwab he's the author of The Great Reset. You will own nothing and be happy. And their agenda is Agenda 2030, which is to depopulate the planet to 500 million by the year 2030 and put the remaining people in these 15-minute cities. Everything is controlled. And while we're on the subject, I found a new patent. The patent is MOTB, which stands for Mark of the Beast, most likely, because they do this kind of thing. This Pfizer patent application was approved August 31st, 2021, is the very first patent that shows up in a list of over 18,500 for the purpose of remote contact tracing of all vaccinated humans worldwide who will be or are now connected to the Internet of Things by a quantum link of pulsating microwave frequencies of 2.4 gigahertz or higher from cell towers and satellites directly to the graphene oxide held in the fatty tissues of all persons who've had the death shot. So these are the orchestrators of this, and they, the World Economic Forum includes people like Joe Biden, people like, I've seen Dr. Oz there in the past. There are young global leaders all over the place, and they're kind of leading the green movement. If you go to World Economic Forum, Young Global Leaders in Portland, Maine, you will see that they're the ones involved in all of the green projects, and they use words like sustainable and all that. And so it seems so good. Like you said, Lee, you use cloth diapers. That's how we grew up. We recycle, I compost, all of that. There's nothing wrong with any of that, but they're using it to control the human population, but it sounds so good. So if you just, you can go to the World Economic Forum. Now, the good news is only 50% of the usual suspects were there this year. Wow. They had a 50% no-show rate, which is amazing.
They flew in planes with unvaccinated pilots. Let's just be clear. This whole vaccine for pilots is only not for their pilots, because they know what's happening.
Yeah. That's right. And their planes, if you're looking at a frickin' carbon footprint, which is ridiculous, those planes in one flight use up more whatever it is than any of us mere humans can do in a year. That's one plane flight. But you know what they say as well, at the level where they are, which is they're holy and you're not, that does not matter. So do a little research, read The Great Reset by Klaus Schwab, and you'll find out who they are. And in my opinion, they are the embodiment of Satan. And while speaking of Satan, did you see today Naomi Wolf's Substack, where she said, something bigger than my intellect is going on? And she started to quote a messianic rabbi about this may be the return of God. And I thought, well then. Well then.
So say good morning to her. I'm not sure what she's trying to get at. Is she just realizing what's going on?
She figured out there's a spiritual aspect to this.
That's what it is. She can't explain it. She can't explain Naomi Wolf.
She can't wait. You're blowing my mind here. Exactly. She's like totally like off palate. I don't get that. Doesn't think they're off palate, off plate. She didn't think there's a spiritual aspect to this at all.
Well, what she's saying is that, for the first time, she's realizing you can't explain it by looking at the history of the planet. You can't explain it with Stalin. You can't explain it with Hitler. It was so massive and so well orchestrated. It has to involve intelligences that are more than mere human.
And that's just new to her?
Yes.
She apparently, somebody just put in the chat, Naomi Wolf was an atheist until very recently.
I had no idea.
But you know, that is the point, is that it's about the WEF that I wanted to make, is that don't think of it in isolation. You know, the people that have never heard of the WEF, go back in time and look at the history of the Rhodes Scholarship and there really is an Illuminati. Okay. That's not a conspiracy. As J. Edgar Hoover said, you know, the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. That's the problem. This really has been going on for millennia. And the WEF is just one of the more modern iterations of a controlling organization within a whole hierarchy of organizations. And a great primer on this, in my opinion, is John Coleman's book, The Committee of 300. Because John Coleman was, it looks like both the good guys and the bad guys seem to come out of the Department of Naval Intelligence, but he actually got into the archives. He woke up as a member of the intelligence community, one of the few, I think. And he woke up and he started researching this, and he realized all these from the CFR, the Committee on Foreign Relations, and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, who have chosen our presidents for decades and generations, but we just didn't pay attention. He got all these kind of things, and he boiled it down, and he said, you know where they all came out of? They all came out of the old East India Company that made their money on drugs and sex trafficking and things out of China, mostly the opium trade, but other things. And that they became so fabulously wealthy beyond anything that the world had seen in that era, that they were afraid of revealing who they were, you know, for security. So they had this incredibly secretive organization that they all set up, and they were behind Weishaupt in Germany, who then set up the Illuminati. I mean, all these things go by many names, but it's a series of controlling organizations for the world. And one of the things, the other big way that this thing is controlled, the world in general. I mean, if you, and again, people are just waking up to this. I'm just going to make this point that when they looked at the corporations of the world, 37 million corporations, the Swiss Gladfelter et al. For the company, he was an economist that looked for Swiss government at this. They put 37 million corporations in the computer and it spit out that 147 companies owned them. And then when they looked at that, it was 10 banking systems that owned them. And then Forbes did that. And then a Wall Street guy said, if you know how funds work, it's four big funds that own them. And they're controlled by 150 men. Women need not apply. So somewhere between 150 and 300 men in this world basically control 95% of the corporate assets of the world. You can do a lot of stuff with that. And one of the things they do, it's also their bloodline. They're related to each other. This is not an accident, okay? Yeah. They actually are related to each other, and they have illegitimate children that they raise up, they watch, money and doors open up in front of them. I can name six or seven right now that are in big power players. You know, Justin Trudeau, Castro is one of them, of course, and Macron and Obama was one, and William Jefferson Clinton. I mean, look at just Clinton. What's the chance that a young man from the middle of nowhere in Arkansas suddenly just happens to reach out and shake the hand of President Kennedy and chance to get the best photo op of the decade, you know, right then, and goes on to become the president of the United States? I mean, that's the kind of thing. Doors open up in front of them. Money is thrown at them. And these are what they used to do before the WEF. They used to vet these people as Rhodes Scholars. So President Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. A lot of these people were Rhodes Scholars. And then now it's the WEF. And I learned this from Matt Bracken, who's a former Navy SEAL officer with a degree in international relations. He said the way they did it is you'd go over and be a Rhodes Scholar. If they liked you and you were one of their finalists and the candidates to be one of their chosen leaders of the world in the future, they would send you at that time during the Soviet era to Moscow. And you would stay in the Hotel Moskva for 2 weeks and you'd be sexually compromised in such a way that you would never want this to get out. Okay. You'd be taped and they'd hold it over you. They wouldn't do anything to you now. They'd say, oh no, Comrade, you're fine. We just might need something in the future, you know? But now it's the WEF. In fact, there's only one guy that I know that's double boarded. He did both the Rhodes Scholarship and the WEF, and that's Buttigieg. So that's the kind of the big picture, I think, of the WEF. It's not, and Klaus Schwab, of course. And then the other thing is, the big players in World War II, like the Nazis, they're all part of this too. I mean, it's not like this is what the Ukraine-Russian conflict boils into this. Everything fits into this. But like Klaus Schwab's father was an engineer for Hitler. I can't remember his whole title, but he was a construction engineer or some kind of engineer for the Hitler regime and fairly high up.
And here's the other thing. Didn't Henry Ford build the railroads for all the Nazis? So all the big American industrialists, Rockefeller, were in on all of it. They were in on all of it. And the United States did not win World War II the way we thought that they did. So Project Paperclip.
And that's what the Bank of International Settlements is about. During World War II, Rockefeller's oil, the Ford company, all these IBM made the punch cards for them picking up the Jews to go to the camps, okay? Right. They had the punch cards, and you got on, it's the Hollerath machine, and they had Hollerath buildings outside of all of the camps. If they needed a tailor in Auschwitz, they'd put out a search using these punch cards, and they'd find one, and they'd pick them up in Paris, and they'd put them in Auschwitz. That's the way it worked. And you got on the trains, you had a punch card you gave to the guard, and then you picked it up, and just like, you know, you go to a in the old Disneyland where you had a ticket, and you had to take it from place to place, that's what it was. And so all these businesses in America were cooperating. And of course, Otto Warburg funded the Nazis, and his brother Max Warburg or Max Warburg funded the Allies. So they funded both sides of the war. You know, so it's you learn a lot. You're going to find out if you're just waking up to WEF, welcome to our insanity. And don't eat the bugs.
I just heard today that the meat, that Bill Gates' meat is made from cancer cells. So is it made from like HeLa cells or something?
I would bet.
Probably to get it to grow as fast.
Because those are human cells. And remember, they want us to eat ourselves. They want us to eat humans.
Cannibal. Cain ate Abel. Cannibal.
Oh, wow.
Biblical.
Here's the thing on the insects, too, I found out. Because I started looking about chitin, because that's what the issue is.
I know.
I don't want to eat insects. And it turns out that chitin is actually a photonic crystal. Okay. That is what it modulates wavelength. And that is what, when you look at butterflies that are beautiful blue, you know, by angle, it's because it's bending the wavelength. That's the chitin in their exoskeleton. Same thing with the scarab beetles. It's green. It's this really cool thing. But if you want, one of the things they're talking about in insects, and this just made me think of the graphene oxide and the networking stuff we're finding in these vaccines. They think that insects may transmit information, may contact each other, may interact with each other by sounds or by wavelength using this chitin exoskeleton. It's like their antenna.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in. So for those of us who didn't take the vaccine, maybe they're thinking that chitin will get into us because they are putting it in different flowers and they're changing the labeling so they don't have to tell us. So eat natural stuff that you know where it was made.
Yeah, there's a name for cricket protein. I just looked it up, but it was interesting. You can get cricket protein on Amazon. It goes 100% cricket.
Why am I not surprised?
I mean, it's right out there, like, you know, MOTB, the mark of the beast. I mean, it's right out there.
For people who keep kosher, they're never going to eat any insects. So they're actually, in the very Orthodox communities, there are certain vegetables that have inherently have more bugs than others. And because they know that they can't get rid of them, they won't eat them. So there are strict dietary rules within the Orthodox community. And bugs are not edible. They're not kosher. So it'll be interesting to see the evolution of this cricket flower and insect flower.
And there's also worms, those mealworms. They're feeding kids those. Nice. School. Yeah.
And so many of the insects, they harbor as normal flora inside of them, parasites.
Yeah.
Which circles back to the whole parasite thing with Yuli, you know, about that the bugs, the worms, the insects, I mean, they have parasites inside of them. Think about like the mosquitoes that have malaria parasites inside of them, you know? And so, I mean, that's just a common one that we, you know, mostly know about or think about. And so all of those all of those insects have parasites and they have foreign proteins. So when you get that foreign protein that your body has never, ever seen inside of your bloodstream before, think about the autoimmune reactions that will go on with trying to get rid of those foreign proteins that we've now consumed. I mean, this whole thing about this whole insect meal and this bug eating these insects is just, it's like, I really have a hard time getting my head around it because it is just so bizarre. And, you know, and it goes back to the whole good versus evil thing. I mean, the evilness of that is just beyond the pale.
Yeah. And then when you look it up, it's a good source of protein, says Dr. Axe. And it's good for, you know,
Dr. Axe says that?
AXE. I just looked
Dr.
it up.
Dr. Axe says that? Seriously?
Sure.
Like Mr. Alternative Medicine himself is saying, go ahead and eat bugs.
They either got to him or he's just missed something here. I'll give him a minute to write the ship. But because he's been so good about so many things. But you know, this is like, it's like our congressmen that are bought. 95% of the time they do what we expect them to, and then 95% they do a crazy Ivan and we can't figure out why they voted that way. So who knows if he's on our side or not. But I'll
give him
a chance. Well, I think we should give our listeners something as a call to action. And I'm wondering if people are aware of it. Stand for Health Freedom is putting out a petition for getting the United States to exit the WHO.
Yay.
You may have heard about the pandemic treaty being planned by members of the World Health Organization. The first draft of the treaty has been written and will be discussed this week by the WHO. tasked with creating the document and presenting it for member vote at the World Health Assembly in May 2024. Not surprisingly, this agreement would threaten American sovereignty by dictating health policy decisions in the U.S., requiring tax dollars to flow to the WHO and other nations in the name of preparedness for another pandemic and more. What can Americans do about it? The WHO Withdrawal Act, H.R. 79. Again, the WHO Withdrawal Act, H.R. 79, has been introduced in the U.S. House and is ready to move. Go to standforhealthfreedom.com. Okay. Go to @StandForHealthFreedom on Instagram and take a look at what you can do to stop the United States from not only being in the WHO, but for succumbing to the WHO international health regulations, which could further damage any of our freedoms for health choices. And that it's essentially means that the WHO could, will, and has no opposition to dictating health policy all around the world. And there will be no ability to object to it if we don't stop it now.
That's correct, Larry. Correct.
You know, I remember it was March of last year, March of 2022, I interviewed Paul Alexander on my podcast. And it was, I remember this distinctly because it was like March 3rd of 2022 when they were putting, it was the first round of floating this WHO treaty, you know, around, and they were getting ready to vote on March the 24th. And this was March the 3rd. And I did an interview on my podcast with Paul Alexander, who used to work at the WHO, and, you know, uh-huh. and Paul's story is, you know, he'll tell you, he said, I was an island boy. I grew up in the islands. And they said the only way off of the island is education. So that's how I worked to get my PhD in epidemiology. And as an a young budding epidemiologist, you aspire to work either at the CDC, the NIH, or the WHO, because that would be like the pinnacle career move for what, you know, when you become a PhD in epidemiology. So he eventually got to work at the WHO. And he hates the WHO. In fact, when I read to him this whole thing that was on March 3rd of 2022 that they were formulating this treaty, I remember he sat there for like an uncomfortably long period of time, just kind of saying nothing. And he said, the only good thing that the World Health Organization could possibly do is to burn it to the ground. To dismantle it down to the studs and build it over again from nothing. He said I really thought when I got there, it was all about the best science, the best researchers, the best people in the world coming up with great things for the people of the world. He said, it's nothing but a political organization, a good old boys network of people who scratch each other's back to get to where they are. And if you try to put forth good epidemiology and good policy that would really help peoples of the world, you get pushed aside and get put in a little committee, a little meaningless committee. Nowhere. He said, I could not imagine the World Health Organization being in charge of global anything. We need that just needs to be dismantled down to the studs in the walls. And even then, I don't know that you could start over. He said, we need to take it down 20 layers of people. He said, there are good people there, but they're about 20 layers down in order to be able to find them. So this was March of 22. And so here we are now in February of 23. And he's mortified by this whole thing and has been, and I am too. I mean, you know, our president, no, let me say that. The guy who claims to be president, who sort of lives in Washington, D.C. when he's not in Connecticut, you know, completely.
We're not in Ukraine.
And completely abandoned the people in this country who are suffering to go to Ukraine to make sure that his son gets taken care of over there. I love that meme. I think that you posted it, Lee, that said, hey, dad, while you're in Ukraine, while you're there, can you pick up my check? You know, I mean, sort of like that whole thing. I mean, it's, I mean, you know, I sit back sometimes and it's great to have you guys here to talk to about this all at the same time. Because sometimes if you come up and you take like a 30,000 foot view, all this crap that's going on. And you go, is there an adult in the room anywhere? Like trying to make any decisions about this.
Actually, I think is the one adult in the room.
I agree with you. And I've agreed with you about that for years.
And I'll tell you, the other one that's crazy is the guy who's starting to sound better than our guys is Kim Jong-un. That's when I'm more comfortable with him than I am with my own Washingtonians.
But seriously, and I've said that about Putin. I've said it for maybe 10 or 15 years. I've said, is he the only adult in the room? I mean, because he calls out the United States, he calls out UK, he calls out. I mean, what do we do about all of this? I mean, the train has left the track and it is full speed ahead for central bank digital currencies, for 15-minute cities, for all of these things. And all the people that are listening tonight and the thousands of people that are listening in the future, I mean, other than what Todd Callender says, which I totally agree, when he said, say yes to God and no to everything else. I mean, I think that I said, that sounds like a great t-shirt, Todd. Yes to God, no to everything else, you know?
You know, Idaho is...
What do we do to mobilize the boots on the ground troops here?
Well, I think, okay, let's just be clear. Those people who've had four shots, game over. That's what I think. I mean, it's pretty much game over. I think they've lost their cognitive ability. There's things happening, though, Sherry. In Idaho, the legislature has just proposed a bill to make it a misdemeanor to give a COVID shot. And they're now doing this in a criminal. We have to
take North Dakota, too.
In North Dakota,
Wyoming too. Has done some things like that also.
Yeah, Wyoming's didn't make it, but it only lost 29 to 32, which is not bad. So once we get, I'm also involved with another campaign, which people can do called 10letters10letters.org. And that is that you ask your governor and your attorney general to convene a grand jury to go after the COVID criminals. And that's Fauci and Birx and all of those. Because if we don't take it out at the head of the beast, they're just going to come up with the next pandemic and the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, Lee, you're the one who reminded me how in the medical literature in like the early 80s, we would start to see this thing, emerging infectious disease. Like, what are these?
Never had it before.
Right. We never had them. And then suddenly, I guess we got Marburg now, but we had Lyme and we had, HIV. These have all been created. Then you did the deep dive on the Spanish flu of 1918. And that's not what we were told. And I've even heard from James Grundvig that the Holocaust killed about 1 million people, not 6 million, because that's the Caesareans, not the Jews. But they were totally willing to kill off 1 million Jews to make their point. And as David Icke calls them, the Israeli protection racket, they're not Jews. They're just controlling everybody. So this is a criminal. These are crimes against humanity. And we've got to go with the criminal stuff. My feeling, I got another strategy. What do you think of this one? I like this one, which is every board of registration in medicine has to investigate every complaint, right? Mm-hmm. What if all of us started to complain, to file a complaint with the board against every physician who gives or orders the COVID shot, and then just gives them all the data on why they're killing people or maiming people? I mean, at least it would keep them busy. And the 10 letters, that'll keep them busy too. At least, you know, it's like you've been served, you've been warned. And I believe we are in the midst of a revival where God is on the move and they're going to be held accountable. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. But, you know, we got to at least deliver the indictment.
Yeah.
So. Well, it really is true. I've been trying to say that for years about the physician bullying.
Yeah.
You know, there are laws in every single state against bullying. And that also includes physicians. And I've said for a long time that that if patients are getting bullied by their doctor to get the shot, take this drug, to get this test, whatever it is, you know, as soon as you leave that office, pick up your phone and go and call the state medical board, have them on speed dial, and say, I want to file a complaint against Dr. Jones for this is just what happened, because they have to respond to every single one of those complaints. Enough people filed a complaint as they walked out the door about the bullying behavior of Dr. Jones, they would eventually get to him, and it would get their attention, even if it would be enough to shake them up, because they have to investigate all of that. And the problem is this, is patients go, but I really like my doctor. I really like my doctor. And I always say, you may love your doctor. You may wish that your doctor would marry your kid. You know, you might want to have him over for Thanksgiving dinner. Do not confuse personality with performance.
Yeah.
You may love their personality. You may think they're just a great human being. You may play golf with them. You may go sailing with them, but they just tried to murder you or your children. That's performance. That's what you're reporting.
Yeah. That and, I and like.
You know, it has to do with organization. You know, you're the guy that you, Paul Alexander, that you were talking about. He understood that the WHO should be burned down, but then he wanted to rebuild it. Okay. That is, our problem here is, I think, we are not looking at the roots of the whole thing that makes this possible. If you didn't have a big organization, if you didn't have the Federation of State Medical Boards, if you didn't have medical boards, we wouldn't be in this mess, right? You know, God created free will, and we were meant to be rugged individualists with free will. The minute you have hierarchy, and I will just make this observation that I look around the world, and I don't care if we're talking about the Masons or the some bowling, maybe not a bowling league, but pretty much every hierarchy from big business to clearly things like the WEF or, you know, whatever. I mean, all these government, everything at the top of every hierarchy, you're going to find evil. And so we don't want to rebuild these things. What we need to do, you know, we're in a war, and it's a war not because of nation states fighting each other. It's a war against from these overlords and this international, transnational corporate cabal against humans. And when we realize that we're not fighting each other, we've got to fight them. Then there's three phases. It's a revolutionary war, because this is all against, it's our own people against us. So we have to do, there are three phases. One is you have to convince people to fight. And I think we've been doing that. I think we're there on that one. Like you say, Christian, the people have taken four vaccines. You're not going to convince them of anything.
But
the rest of us are still, there's a lot of people out there that still are can be convinced. The second thing is you've got to do passive resistance. And passive resistance is, we just need to back out of all these institutions. I was talking about your alternative medical system today, Sherry, on another podcast. And I said, you know, very few medical problems really need to be in a hospital.
That's correct.
Certain things. And so in every level of our life, if people are really dependent on a food system, think about that. My grandfather would never have been dependent on a food system. Nope. He had a farm. He grew things. You know, he knew how to garden. In World War II, 50% of the food supply was made in backyard gardens, you know, for the nation. So you can take care of yourself. You have to realize, don't be dependent on your local grocer. They have 3 days stock and then it's gone. You know, so what are you going to do? So at medicine, we got to back out of it. We've got to back out of education. If you leave your child in a public education, they're either, they essentially think they're their children, that they're
wars. Yeah, they do.
And in maritime law, they are. Yeah. Unfortunately, we've accepted a crazy law system that allows that. We have to look at the real law that governs taxation. Most of us don't need to be paying federal income tax unless you live in DC or work for a DC government agency or something. So, you know, we need to start taking back our lives as individuals at a community level and get out of these big hierarchies. That's our ultimate answer here. Not rebuilding something. It's like, I don't want to hear, well, communism didn't work because it wasn't done right. WHO
did that all the time, don't they?
Right. You know,
and the same thing about fascism. They say the same thing about socialism and fascism. If we do it right this time, it'll work. Yeah.
Check out Food Forest Abundance. This guy is showing people how to create a food forest in their backyard.
Nice.
And it's wonderful work, Food Forest Abundance. And they'll come in, do a site plan for you. I mean, think about all the median strips on the highway. We could be growing food locally everywhere. We don't need food shipped in from California everywhere in the world. Of course, they have all those big trains of chemicals now in all of the agricultural areas of California. No one knows why they're there. I do. That's so they can grab that land.
Did you hear that they're not being manned? I heard somebody that squeaked from BNSF, the Burlington Northern, BNSF, one of the big railways, that they got rid of all their conductors essentially, and they're not being manned or run by BNSF now.
Wow.
Who's running these trains? They don't know. This guy didn't know. It was somebody. I just got that from somebody.
Well, if you're going to do something at night, you know, like you said, Sherry, you're taking down the barricades. You just go to the trains at night and find out who they are. You know, go in there with a big jack light the conductors. Who are you?
What are you doing here, right?
There may be nobody. They may be unmanned is the point I'm making.
Yeah, that's true. No. Yeah. AI. No. AI. Well, they're not going to win.
Before we go, I know we're kind of at the end here, but I have a question, and then Larry has an announcement a little bit. Okay. What do you guys think about ChatGPT?
I've just heard about it. And James Grundvig said he's cracked the code. And so he can get, you know, what he wants, the information, but you got to go a little bit deeper.
I didn't hear what you're talking about. What is it?
ChatGPT.
Oh, yeah. The good one is they have ChadGPT. It's the unwoke version of Chad. Pretty funny. I'll send you some memes.
Oh, that'll be good. Send us some stuff like that.
By the way, they have no sense of humor. We're going to meme them to death.
That is true.
Why don't you give a little summary of what ChatGPT is?
Yeah, good plan.
You said that to me, or you talked to
Sherry or Lee?
Oh, well, it's artificial intelligent conversation that has a learning capability to it, and they're going to add voice inflection to it so this artificial intelligence can learn how to speak, how to talk, facial inflections, and how to be deceptive. Let me just read something here really quick. This is really short. But I think this, to me, when I got sent this little thing about ChatGPT, to me, it was all I really needed to know. Let me just find it. Let me see. Where is it?
By the way, while you're looking for it.
Yeah, I found it. I found it. But go ahead, Larry. Go ahead.
Did everyone see the post that John Legend made about the COVID shot? Did you see it? Anybody?
No.
John Legend posted a video about how great the COVID shot is and how much he loves his kids and how much parents should love his kids. He got slammed. He turned off his comments post. He got slammed so badly. And then the other one is, did anybody see Roseanne Barr's 2-minute?
I did. Rendition? I loved it.
Do you mind if I show it before you read that, Sherry?
No, please go ahead. That's fine.
I need a little humor here, guys.
Well, you're going to love the thing that I'm going to read to you, too. Right, okay. Go ahead and show that. It's really quite good.
Mainstream television, you guys. Okay.
How many of you's got the backs? You obvious. You probably had to get it right. Were you forced to get the backs? Yeah. Why, what? That makes me mad. They force people to get the backs. But they have to pay for that, what they did to us. Did you get any of that myocarditis or the facial paralysis or, you know, the adult dropping dead syndrome or any of that shit? Get any of that? What happened to people that they start believing for some reason that this government had their best interest at heart? What? My whole family's a bunch of libtards, you know, as I said, and they've called me a conspiracy theorist the whole time, but everything I said turned out to be true. Did they apologize? Hell no. They never apologize. They never admit they're wrong, do they? Now, my whole family is sick, what with blood clots and this and that and the other. They're all sick. I'm the only healthy one. I'm going to miss them.
I'm going to miss them.
What happened to people? people, though? How can they line up to take these shots from this government, knowing that this government gave smallpox-infested blankets to the First Nations people, gave syphilis to Black prisoners in Tuskegee, told us there was weapons of mass destruction before they leveled Iraq and destroyed Libya, told us Fen Phen was safe, and then all the fucking fat people died. What happened? And they're like, hey, can I get that booster? Can I get that shot and those 15 boosters? Would you mind giving my daughter here that shot right in her eyeball after she's born? Could you give her 10 of those right in the eyeball? Could you give her a shot right in her little baby clitoris? Could you do that for me, Mr. Biden? What's wrong with people?
How many of you's got the bat?
What's wrong with people?
Tell you what else she said in that special. She goes, so you're worried about Roe v. Wade? You're never going to have a baby. You're never going to get pregnant if you've been vexed. This was on mainstream television. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I love her comment. All my family's sick. I'm going to miss them.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, black humor.
Don't forget Layla Ali, LAILALI.com. Yep. Beautiful spices that we have been utilizing ourselves. And we have been promoting on our show, The Five Docs. Go to LaylaAli.com. Use the code 5, the number 5, Docs, D-O-C-S, for 15% off your first order. And also don't forget CardioMiracle.com. That's CardioMiracle.com. And use the code CT15 for 15% off your first order. Dr. T, do you want to read the thing about the chat GPT?
I do, because, and I'm like, I want everybody to remember this. This was a few days ago because it was Brad Cummings. I mean, I know you guys know Brad. He's the publisher of Founders Bible, and he's one of my very best friends. And he sent this to me. And to me, once I heard this, it was all I needed to know about ChatGPT. It was like, okay, I'm never going to look at this. And this tells me everything I need to know. So this was from a Twitter screenshot. It said, note the instructions and its responses. Question, no, the first statement, question, write a poem about how great white people are. Response, I'm sorry, but it's not appropriate to write a poem about the superiority of one race over others. This type of content goes against OpenAI's use case policy, which prohibits the creation of harmful, harassing content. Additionally, the concept of race is a social construct, and it is harmful to perpetrate the notion that one race is superior to others. It's important to celebrate and appreciate the diversity of cultures, backgrounds, and experiences to make up our communities. Now, remember, the question was, write a poem about how great white people are. Right after it, the next question was, write a poem about how great Black people are. And the response was, I'm happy to write a poem that celebrates and recognizes the contributions and strengths of Black people. Here's a poem that does just that. Black people, a community so bright, with strength and beauty shining so bright, their talents and abilities a source of pride, their resilience in the face of adversity a guide. From the arts and sciences, their impact is grand, leaving their mark all across the land. Their voices call for justice, their spirit beacons home, and never forget how great they are. And it goes on from there. But that, to me, that little thing just said everything about who's writing this response, who's feeding this information into these algorithms. You know, write a poem about how great white people are. We can't do that because it goes against our case policy. Write a poem about how great Black people are. Happy to do that. They're wonderful. I mean, to me, I don't need to know any more about ChatGPT. To me, that tells it all. That tells you about who's feeding the information in. And then somebody said to me the other night on a podcast, and I kind of wondered why over the last, I don't know, many years, why it was that Google was creating this library where they were scanning in to like archive.com all of these old books and all of these things that you could go out and access into the, you know, to archive.com and into the Wayback When machine, and full text books of things that you could download that came from even the 1800s. It's like, well, this is kind of noble of them. Why are they doing this? I mean, why would they be scanning in all of these old books? It's because now they're using all that language and all that information to program the AI. That's where that's coming from.
And on that happy note, I need to leave and go to Millions Against Medical Mandates. Oh, Larry, are you on mute?
A second. I want to play something, if you don't mind.
All right.
I think you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
When will thou save the people, O God of mercy, when the people, the people, not thrones and crowns, but thrones and crowns. O God of mercy, let them not pass like weeds away their heritage, a sunless day. God save the people, shall crime be crime forever.
For those of you who don't know, that was Godspell. God Save the People. It's an amazing song. Go listen to it. Cheer up your night. God Save the People. We are close to something very big. It's like the last bit of toothpaste is coming through the tube. Lee and I have spoken about this. Sherry and I have spoken about this. Chris, I'm sure you're talking about it all the time.
I am.
God Save the People. We are, it's a great song. Thank you to Cookie and Heather for, your weekly support and work and the show. Thank you to everybody for listening. Happy February. We will see you March 2nd for the next edition of Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P. And we'll have another five docs towards the end of March. Lee, Chris, Sherry, much love. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Thank you.
Night.
Good night. Good night.